Welcome to LOA Today. I'm Walt Thiessen here with Life Coach Dan Mangana. Today is Thursday, September the 17th, 2020. We are recording this at 3 p.m. New York time, and wherever you are in the world, thanks for joining us for another episode of LOA Today, your daily dose of happy. Today is a special episode because today we're reaching out to local cable access and reaching a new audience, an audience, Daniel, that for the most part probably knows little to nothing about the law of attraction. So we're going to kind of give them a little bit of an introduction. And I'll start off by saying you're looking smiling and happy today from Cabo, Mexico. How are things there?
I don't know, man. It's a hard life living in paradise.
Yeah, but somebody's got to do it, you know? So anyway, to give people an idea, LOA Today is based on the concept of the law of attraction. And some people will remember back in 2006, there was a movie that came out called The Secret, which was ultimately popularized by an appearance on Oprah Winfrey and also had a tremendous social media campaign that really bursted onto the scene and it kind of took the world by storm so that a large chunk of the population was exposed to this concept for the first time. If you're not familiar with it, if you're familiar with Christian teachings, the easiest way to explain it is it's sowing and reaping. It's sowing and reaping on steroids, I guess you could say. We kind of expand it a lot further than Christianity.
I love the way you mix the idea of Christianity with steroids.
Yeah, well, you know, you grab the analogies wherever you can, you know?
Yeah, you do. And supplement them as required.
That's right, exactly. But it is. It's sowing and reaping. What you sow is what you'll reap. And that's basically what the law of attraction is. Now, we'll go into more details about that. But trying to start that as a foundation point, it's a concept that we will describe from a non-religious perspective. In other words, most people who are followers of law of attraction teaching and so forth, it's a spiritual practice, but it's not generally associated with a particular religion like sowing and reaping is. So just to give you a little context. And Daniel, you actually were involved in this whole thing long before The Secret came along. The Secret was really my introduction, but I mean, how far back does it go for you?
I'm going back 20 years. I'm going back to when we actually didn't call it law of attraction. We actually looked at the primary universal laws that are behind the law of attraction, because the law of attraction isn't actually a primary universal law. It's a, what do they call it? Secondary? I think they call it secondary, but it's not a primary universal law.
Okay. So you've been dealing with it for quite a bit longer than I have, which is one reason why I have you on the show. Now, I also want to give people an idea of who Daniel is. You already have the idea that he lives in Cabo San Lucas in Mexico on the southern tip of the Baja Peninsula in paradise on the seashore. I mean, the shore is right outside his window there. So that will give you an idea of just how successful Daniel has been in life. He is able to live that kind of a lifestyle. And that's why he is a very successful life coach, primarily helping people with money issues, but also with really all aspects of, all the things that people want to have in their lives. They want to have good relationships. They want to have good health. They want to have great careers. They want to enjoy life. I mean, there's like a long list of things that we could put on there. But Daniel is mainly known for coaching people to 6- and 7-figure income. So he knows a little bit about the money side of this thing, which is another reason why we brought him on here. He is the author of The Money Game and also of a book called Beyond Intention. The Money Game is something specific to how you attract money into your life. Beyond Intention is a broader concept and goes into much greater depth than the movie The Secret did. So those are two little tips I'll give you to go look on Amazon for those pieces there. You can also, by the way, I'll just throw this in too. We have an app that goes with LOA Today. LOA Today is a podcast, and we're now adapting it for local cable access as well. But we have an app that goes with our show. You can look at it on either iPhones or Android phones. Just do a search for LOA Today podcast player. And built into the app on the goodies page, as we like to call it, is a free copy of Dan's.
Is that my alter ego?
Oh, maybe that's what it is. Yeah.
I am Don Daniel.
Of Dan's ebook, The Money Game. So you can get a free copy that way. So just a little plug for Dan's book. So, Daniel, okay, I've been doing a little talking here, but I want to go to the expert who really knows this stuff, who knows it better than the secret knows this stuff. So,
I'm a student. I follow this. Is it Socrates that says the truly wise man is the one who knows he knows nothing? So, I like to always approach things as just another student because I firmly believe that everything in life can be a gift of lesson, a gift of learning. So, a child who we might assume doesn't know very much can give us the deepest lessons of the universe, I think.
That is true. And in fact, it is not just for this subject, but for any subject. I think that's really the ideal approach. We want to get the ego out of the way and really approach it like, I'm here to learn something. I don't care how much I've learned. I'm here to learn something. It's one of the reasons that has kept me going with doing this podcast. I've been doing this podcast for 8 years now.
It's 8 years now.
8 years. Yeah. 8 years this month. In fact, the anniversary is coming up next week. But and you know, it's one subject for 8 years. Well, you know, you would think you'd run out of things to talk about. Fortunately, the law of attraction applies throughout our lives. And to give people a sense of that, the basic concept says everything in your life, you attract it. You may not have thought of it in terms of you attracting it, but you did. So just look around at anything that's in your life and you attracted it, whether you knew how it worked or not.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of a stunning concept, isn't it? When you kind of look at things that way.
Yeah. And also a very uncomfortable concept because we haven't all had beautiful, lovely, uninterrupted lives. Some of us have been witness to darkness or experienced darkness. And so I think one of the first points of call of resistance for people around this idea is, well, I didn't ask to be sexually assaulted. I didn't ask to lose a loved one. I didn't ask to be in a war zone. I didn't ask to be born into a country where a dictator's in control and so on and so forth. I didn't choose to lose my business because of global events right now. But when we look behind that, and just for context, I wasn't born with a silver spoon in my mouth. I'm not some blue-blooded aristocrat that's had everything given to me on a plate. I've worked for everything that I've achieved and I've had some bumps on the way. It's not been a beautiful journey. So I'm speaking from personal experience when I say that even though there have been some shadows on the road, the second that I stepped into a full ownership of every aspect of that, the space came in for me to have mastery over what I experienced going forward. And that's a true gift, even though it doesn't look like it's got the prettiest packaging at the start sometimes.
Or even during the journey. I mean, that's half the challenge is dealing with all the bumps along the way, right?
Exactly.
Because they can be more than bumps. They can be like, you know, they can be potholes. They can like take out your suspension.
Or black holes into another dimension of darkness. Like, who knows?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And certainly anyone who is alive today has been through a number of black potholes, really tough stuff. You've got COVID. Mm-hmm. You've got a crashed economy. You've got all kinds of craziness in the political world. You've got the racial tensions. I mean, it's just like a long list. And people are, I think a lot of people are feeling really beaten down by what's going on in life today. Which is one of the reasons we wanted to get this onto Cable Access to help lift people up a bit.
Definitely.
But this is serious stuff that people are doing.
Yeah. Very serious. But there's a gift. There's a gift, regardless of what it looks like on the outside. There's the opportunity to receive a gift in this awareness of the fact that if we start directing the application of this, we can start to be a little bit more deliberate in what we're experiencing rather than being a victim of circumstance.
So when you are teaching, and by the way, you also have some Facebook groups and so forth, so you're constantly teaching this to a wide range of people, and you've been doing this for many years now. When you're teaching this particularly to a group that has not been exposed to this in a large way before, how do you usually begin it? I mean, I've done my presentation here, but how do you usually start?
Well, I invite people I like to look at the closest step forward in the direction that we want to move from where we are now. Something that we can all agree on. I worked with a coach who was coaching me on something, and he called it chunking down, like coming down to a space where we can all be on the same level.
Okay.
We may have to take a minute to breathe it in, but we can see it and we can accept it. And for me, that's the first aspect of the first step of my Beyond Intention paradigm, which of course is what my book Stepping Beyond Intention is all about. And that's the idea that regardless of how much we accept this idea that we are experiencing a world that's reflected in who we are, we can all accept the simple mathematics of this one idea. No matter what circumstance that we've been through or that we will go through, no matter what relationship we're going to be in, what win, what loss, what challenge, what celebration, there's one common factor in all of them. There may be some factors that are present in many. Even if you've spent every hour of your life by your mum's side, there's still going to be times when you go to the bathroom by yourself. You know, there's always going to be only one common factor. And I call this common denominator theory, and that's us. So by virtue of the fact that there is always going to be that common denominator, regardless of how esoteric you want to get with the idea of universal law, the law of attraction, and so on, we can kind of agree that logically, if I'm the common factor, the common denominator in every experience in my life, if I want to affect change with the greatest efficacy, the place to affect that change is with myself. If I've got 20 relationships, all that have varying degree of challenge, or I can go and try and change 20 people and battle with them. I can go and change 20 different dynamics and what have you, or I can change me and divert all of that energy into affecting a bigger change in myself. The effect of that will be felt in all 20 relationships, to varying degrees, yes, but all of them will experience a change because the contribution to the equation of me plus them, me, has changed, and therefore the product of that equation must be different too. And that's why I invite people to start just accepting that simple idea that we are the common denominator in every experience in our life.
That is a good starting point. It's a little startling, the idea that really, if we're going to have some major changes shift in our lives, we're the ones who have to make the change. Because we normally associate, well, you know, my job needs to change, my spouse needs to change, my boss needs to change, all these other factors outside of me need to change. So the idea, the suggestion that we ourselves are the ones who need to change, that's, it's shocking, to be perfectly honest, when you're
definitely
new to this.
Definitely. And again, the simplicity of it doesn't take away from the challenge behind it, right? And the truth of it doesn't take away from the discomfort of it, but the logic, you'd be hard pressed to argue the logic of it. Maths is a universal language. It doesn't lie. 1 + 1 = 2. 2 + 1 can't equal 2. It now must equal 3. Mm-hmm. So when we change one part of the equation, it will change. Now, we can direct all our attention to trying to change someone else or to change something else. Nobody's saying that you can't do that. But efficacy and efficiency will be found in changing how we're showing up. Rather than trying to change who someone is, change your response or change your location and take yourself out of the equation completely. Now there's no problem. Or we can spend years, as people do in their relationships or what have you, trying to change the other person, which invariably we find doesn't work anyway, because we can't control other people, but we can have impact from who we are and how we're showing up and how we're contributing to an equation.
And I think the other part of the whole conversation that we're having here that can be pretty startling is the idea that if we do make changes in ourselves, that it can have almost unforeseen results that are beyond anything that we were dreaming about.
Mm-hmm, definitely. And I mean, there's a rabbit hole, this universal law, esoteric consciousness and spirituality. If you go down the rabbit hole, you can get lost, right?
Really quickly.
And one of the things I love to do is to effectively remove the rabbit hole aspect of it and just give a ladder for us to go as deep as we want and get what we need. Because I think sometimes we can be so caught up in the downward drop of the rabbit hole that we actually lose perspective on why we're there in the first place. And a lot of the people who have, unlike perhaps many of our listeners, been in this kind of information for many, many years, they come to me. And what we end up doing is just giving them perspective on where they are in the rabbit hole so that they can see that 90% of the time, they don't need to be that deep anyway. you know, getting so caught up in practices, they've forgotten about the human experience itself. And getting some practical results that allows them to have a more abundant, joyful, purpose-driven life, which is what I'm all about doing. But when we do take a step back, when we do start looking at where what we want, which should precede what we're learning, then we can assess how deep into this rabbit hole do we want to go? Do we want to just get some dominion over ourselves in order to manage our emotional state so that we don't respond to people in the same way? And perhaps that's going to be the magic key, for want of a better phrase, to creating the life that we want. Maybe it's going to be developing enough courage to walk away from a disempowering relationship, or to head out on our own and start our own business, or to even go out into the job market and look for something else. You know, it all comes down really to what we want to get from life. But once we know what we want to get from life, we can start to map out an effective road to getting there, which may not even necessarily be this information. It may be something a lot simpler, or it may just be an aspect of this information that facilitates us stepping into what we truly want to see in our life.
Now, we've laid out at least a promise of the idea that just by changing ourselves, we can produce some pretty remarkable changes in our lives. That's still going to sound pretty crazy to some people. I mean, a part of the audience we're reaching, they're going to be people who are living in poverty right now, who are just, you know, they're terrified, they're unemployed, you know, they can't find a job, they're trying to figure out how to get through all this COVID time and so forth. And the idea that all you have to do is change your thought process and get things changing, you can almost hear the echo of the person saying, yeah, you don't live with reality right now, man. Get with the real program.
I mean, I don't personally believe that either. And that's a big cornerstone of my work, that I don't believe that I can just do some course I bought on the internet and repeat something every morning in a mirror and my life's going to magically change. I'm going to listen to some magical audio every day and it's going to change my life. I firmly believe, and this has been proven time and time again with the people I've worked with and with what I've seen and experienced over the last two decades, that it takes a holistic approach to a complete overhaul in who we are.
When we're talking holistic about, approach.
Yeah. When we're talking about changing from a one to a two in the equation, I'm not talking about just changing one aspect of ourselves. I'm talking about a complete overhaul. Because one of the aspects of the law of attraction is that we're effectively saying that we end up receiving a material response to who we are as a whole. So that's not just what we're thinking, it's what we're feeling, our emotional state, our thoughts, and also our actions and choices too. All of that needs to be in alignment with the new outcome. So if someone's sitting there feeling really dark and depressed, but having happy thoughts, even though that's probably unlikely to happen, but then sitting around at home and not doing anything about it, the likelihood that there's going to be a material change is very low. It takes a clear idea of what you want to move to instead, right? And I call that intention. It takes a management of our energy levels, of our emotional state, of our, in the law of attraction, we refer to something called vibration, which really is just the measurable expression of our emotional state and our feeling state. Our beliefs, our level of certainty, and what we're mentally rehearsing as a result of that, followed by and supported by the choices that we're making and how we're showing up every day in order to create change. One of the things that people talk about with The Secret, and we were talking about this, I think, just on Tuesday, is this idea that it's been oversimplified to the point of disbelief. I think it was a beautiful gift in giving people the opportunity to at least peek behind the curtain, perhaps a kindergarten class, right, of introduction, sure, a preschool.
Oh, yeah.
But when we're talking about overhauling our reality, for want of a better phrase, or really upending and remaking our life, it's all of these aspects, not just happy thoughts, not just feeling good, and not just working hard. It's feeling good, believing with certainty that something can happen, not that it will happen, that it can happen is all we need, just the openness to its possibility, and then showing up in our life accordingly. Then things change.
And you also include another concept, which we haven't touched upon yet, but it's in your books and in a lot of your teachings. And I think it's a great point to bring it in right here. That concept is micro-shifting or micro-stepping. Doing things a little bit at a time, little bit, not trying to bite off big, you know, huge bites at a time, little tiny steps. Why is that so important?
I mean, micro-shifting has been one of the most popular aspects of my work over the past few years. I think it's because it really gives people space to breathe. So microshifts are a consistent series of baby steps deliberately made in the direction of a consciously chosen outcome. Basically, little steps that I've chosen to make in the direction of what I've chosen to experience. And we do that in steps that I call minimum deliverables. And what a minimum deliverable is what's something that I know I can do? Without fail, I can definitely pull this off. What can I definitely do? And that may be as little as I recorded a podcast actually yesterday with someone saying it could just be putting a pen by the bed. You know, the eventual aim is to have a healthy relationship through a journal practice with yourself. But just putting the pen by the bed could be the first step. And maybe you're just going to pull it out and put it by the bed a couple of times. And maybe then you're going to hold the pen in your hand. Maybe then all you're going to do is just buy the journal. Maybe then all you're going to do is write in the journal one thing that you're grateful for that day and start to step into it. But those micro shifts allow space for the resistance to be sidestepped, for the limiting beliefs about the outcome to be given a chance to be subsided, for the gargantuous task that we sometimes see it as to be broken down into manageable steps that our mind can actually wrap its head around. Because everybody's got the capacity to make quantum leaps. Everyone does. Everyone. We've all got the potential, sorry. But we've all got the ability and the capacity to make those minimum deliverables. We can all take a baby step. And when those baby steps are consistently made over a long period of time, and sometimes even a short period of time, we start to experience quantum leaps. All of a sudden, just doing 5 minutes of exercise every day, you start to feel good about doing that exercise. Mm-hmm. You know, hey, I'm going to do 10 minutes a day. And before you know it, you've lost weight, you're healthy, and your heart's good. But it started with just a minute or two. Maybe it's just doing a warm-up or just stretching, just getting into that habit and allowing yourself to see that it's actually fun. It's actually something that I want to do. There are results that I can celebrate and feel happy about. So regardless of what we're creating, I always invite people to take baby steps consciously and consistently in the direction of what they desire to create.
Now, you also used two other words in there, or terms actually, in that beautiful description that I think deserve to be brought out. And those terms are resistance and limiting beliefs. And they are a major portion of what we talk about here many times on the podcast, mm-hmm. episode after episode. But mm-hmm. for our new listeners on Cable Access, talk about that a little bit, because those are pretty important points, aren't they?
Definitely. And I think this is when we start to go back into this whole idea of the law of attraction as a standalone thing. Sometimes it's better served to be supported by other ideas, other concepts and other teachings too. And when we start to look at my idea of us not just being a physical body, but having mental aspects of ourselves and emotional, energetic aspects of ourselves, each one of those has a potential for blocks, for stoppages, for limitations. Physically, we may run out of energy. We may be tired, or we may be physically constrained by quarantines or by limits in our finances or limits in our immediate network of people. In relation to our mind, limiting beliefs is just that. See, the brain actually has within it actual aspects that literally shut down and stop us witnessing things that we don't believe are possible. It's a great function for stopping us overloading with all the data that we're taking in. But when that idea of what is and isn't possible becomes polluted with ideas that stand contrary to what we want to experience, the mind starts to shut down. It's important to remember that the unconscious mind operates at 10,000 to 10 million times the speed of the conscious mind. That's a lot of processing power that we can't consciously keep up with. It's just not feasible to be able to do that. And when we remember that our beliefs, our narratives and stories about what's possible, what's not, who we are, our level of self-worth and all of that sits at an unconscious level. And generally speaking, we don't actually have a say, really, in the imprinting of those original thoughts. Then the lens through which we're seeing our world and what's possible becomes guided by that. And when that lens filters out the possibility of having a loving relationship, having wealth and abundance, or having a healthy body, then even if the opportunity to experience that comes up, we're not going to see it. And limiting beliefs, which aren't there to harm us, we're actually there to protect us, can end up in inhibiting or impeding us from having the experience that we want. And so understanding how to move beyond limiting beliefs, which is a big part of my work, I like to give people hacks to support in that, opens up the field for us to experience more of life, more love, more joy, more health, more goodness, more abundance.
I was just saying I like the word hacks as well. That's all.
Is that the computer geek in you?
Absolutely, yes. Hey, we draw from our experience, right? Mm-hmm. And indeed, I can imagine people who are watching the program now for the first time on local access are kind of doing that right now. They're kind of taking some mental inventory and comparing what you've been talking about to what they're experiencing in their own lives. I mean, one thing that may have resonated with a number of people is the idea that if you just keep doing what you've been doing all along, you're going to keep getting the same result.
Yeah.
It's kind of insanity to assume that if you just keep complaining about what you've been going through, that it's going to somehow improve. And yet, how often do we do that? I mean, come on, let's be honest.
Exactly. And all of us are guilty of that on some level and in some way. And it's important. I just want to kind of nudge the audience not to start beating themselves up as a result of this, because we can do that sometimes, right?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God, I can't believe this happened and this, and I've been, you know, this happened and that, blah, blah, blah. That doesn't serve to support us moving forward.
No.
You know, sometimes the brain, which is very tricksy, can use that to actually keep us in the same place. Mm. So we become aware of this and then we start beating ourselves up. And then we're so caught in a lockstep with beating ourselves up that we don't actually move forward at all. We just get caught. Oh, I'm too busy beating. I'd love to look at that new opportunity, but I'm too busy beating myself up now and lost in shame and guilt around what I've created before. You know, and just going back to the resistance point that you brought forward. Resistance is just the mind's, a medium of the mind to keep things the same place, to stop us moving forward. And it's, you know, I don't want people starting to run around crapping on the mind. The mind is doing that because it's given an edict to protect us. And when it's been given a view and a set of instructions to keep to, the mind, which never loses, will enact that to perfection. So when we use ideas like micro sifting and taking baby steps and easing into change and transformation, we allow that resistance to be dropped a little bit because we're not moving so far beyond where we are. I always like to say push your edge, but not your buttons. Push the edge of your belief. Push the edge of what you're open to. Push the edge of what you deem possible, but not so much that the resistance flares up and you end up not moving forward at all.
Another reason for the micro shifting, one mm-hmm. little bit at a time, not trying to swallow the whole thing all at once. Because it's too much. I mean, let's be perfectly bluntly honest. The stuff that I've talked about for 8 years on the podcast, the stuff that you talk about with me on a weekly basis, blows your mind the first time you're exposed to it. Yeah. The first time you actually get some kind of result, that blows your mind. Yeah. I mean, it's just one thing after another where your mind can hardly even keep up with all this change that's going on.
Mm-hmm. And we invariably see, I mean, people that do sort of coaching with me come to a coaching weekend or one of my coaching days, you know, stuff shifts in a big way sometimes. And, it's important to be able to hold space for yourself to be able to deal with that change and to resource yourself to be able to hold that change. And the second that we start being open to the idea that there's another way of doing things, then our reality is going to respond in what we receive back against that openness. And it's important to be gentle in how we approach it, because miracles can start happening. And as much as we say we want miracles, oftentimes, in the face of it, it can be a bit much for us.
It can seem overwhelmingly unbelievable.
Mm-hmm. I mean,
truly, honestly, that's the way it usually seems at the beginning. Mm-hmm. So, okay, well, let's assume for the sake of discussion that our viewers and listeners have opened their minds enough to say, okay, I'm willing to consider the possibility of what it is that you're talking about. Mm-hmm. I like the idea of taking small steps. You know, big steps are usually... they're pretty scary, and you get all kinds of, you know, gurus out there teaching all this stuff, and you don't even, your head starts to spin after a while. You can't follow it. So what are my next steps? What can I do next to take that first micro step, that first micro shifting step?
I think first of all, it's developing a relationship with yourself so that you can actually discern what you really want. Because most of the time, the reason why we're wanting a change is because we're living a life that we don't really want. But if we come back to the law of attraction for a moment, the more focus we give to what we don't want, that focus still gives a relationship that facilitates that still being created. So thinking about what I don't want actually leaves me open to having more of what I don't want. So we need to start reframing things, but we can only do that if we've got a strong enough relationship with ourselves to be able to understand what do I want. And when I first started coaching a few years ago, I used to work with people going through midlife crisis. That's what I first did before the abundance stuff. And what we'd always invariably find is that the reason why people were going through that time in their life is that they'd spent a life living on other people's terms. So they'd gone for the career, they'd got the trophy wife or the trophy husband, 2.4 kids, white picket fence, and then felt empty. The noise stopped. They've made it as high as they're going to make it on the corporate ladder, or been burnt out being on the corporate ladder, or the gentle hum in their ears of the dream that they left as a child starts to get louder, and they get haunted by it, and it causes a meltdown of some sort. Some turn to some kind of addiction. Some go and have extramarital affairs or blow it all up, walking away from their job or walking away from the family, because they just weren't ready to handle the awakening to the truth that this life that they've spent decades in some instances building up wasn't what they wanted. So what my work was in that instance was supporting them in creating a vision of what they actually want, having healing in some of those relationships that perhaps they'd harmed in the outburst of sort of blowing things up, moving forward towards it. But we can't get anywhere unless we know where anywhere is.
That's important. That's a, I mean, that's something you can kind of slip by pretty quickly, but that's really important.
Mega important. And people, like, they'll have undefined, oh, I want to be rich. I want to be happy. I want to give back.
All of which are perfectly noble. They're good.
Yeah, but they're undefined targets. And if they're undefined targets, then the details will be filled in by your unconscious mind. And the unconscious mind is the very thing that's got you what you wanted in the first, what you wanted to run away from in the first place. So we can't leave that to chance. Well, we can, but the outcome's probably not going to be what we want. So developing that relationship with ourselves, where with sincerity, integrity, and honesty with ourselves, we can start to map out, okay, I understand what I don't want. What do I want? Wake up tomorrow and everything's perfect. What does that look like? And then I can start to build an effective roadmap to move my emotional state to match that experience, to move my belief systems to match that experience. You know, you'd be surprised how many people came into my program, Micro to Millions, thinking that they wanted to be a millionaire, spent a couple of months there and realized, oh my God, I don't want to be a millionaire. I'm actually really quite happy with what I've got. Can I just get some financial freedom so I don't have to work? I was like, yeah, sure, whatever. You know, they were going to put all that time and energy into making, you know, big fortunes. And it wasn't even necessary. So that energy that was going to go into that can be redirected into more time with family, perhaps following a pursuit or embodying a hobby. When we know what we want, we can also cut the journey time, because oftentimes what we think we want may even be bigger and more complex and more challenging than what we truly want.
Yeah. And that is something that only comes by doing the work that you're talking about here. It makes it sound harder than it really is.
Yeah.
But it does require a commitment and sticking to it every single day and doing the stuff. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about some of the stuff to do. I mean, you've kind of hinted at a few things where we want to identify specifically what we want and so forth. But let's go into that a little bit deeper. What are the things we need to do to build that relationship you're talking about?
First and foremost, getting comfortable with silence. The world is so noisy right now. We don't ever give ourselves silence. We get up, the alarm goes off, the kids are screaming, the spouse is screaming, we're in the shower, the phone's ringing, we're on social media, we're at the breakfast table, everyone's talking, the radio's on, the TV's on, you're in the car, or you're on the train and the radio's going, or people are talking, there's a lot of noise, there's flashing, you get to work, you're on there all day, and then you have a lunch break, you grab a quick sandwich while you're still doing an email, and then you get back and then there's a noise and then you go to sleep and you wake up and you do the whole thing again. There's no time to just connect and just be okay with silence. And I think in many, many corners, we're even made to feel uncomfortable around silence. You're very quiet. Is something wrong?
Yes.
You know, oh, I need to put the radio on. It's so quiet here. Mm. We don't just go out into nature and just listen to nature and just be at peace with ourselves. Sometimes it's because we're scared of what's there in the silence. Sometimes it's just we haven't actually been able to experience how lovely it can be. But being comfortable with the silence creates space for us to be able to ask questions and receive clean answers, answers free of stories, answers free of ego, answers free of the limiting beliefs and narratives, just pure answers.
To put it another way, what we're really talking about is quieting that mind so we can kind of regain control of our own life situation.
Yeah, and getting quiet in the mind is a lot easier when the environment's quiet.
Yes, that's true.
So just facilitating quiet, and that allows quietness of the body, quietness of the mind, quietness of the soul, if you will. And from there, we can start to ask the questions and get the answers.
What about for somebody who finds that, you know, maybe they'll take some time for, you know, a few days maybe, and they'll try to sit for 5 minutes and see if they can get quiet, but the mind just keeps going, keeps racing, and all this stuff is going on. There's no quiet.
Who cares? That's what I have to say about that.
the idea is to be quiet. I mean,
yeah, but this is the thing. The mind can be as noisy as it wants. You don't have to listen. And for me, that's true mastery. Being able to sit with the noise and to witness and watch it without being attached to what it has to say. That's a lot of what Eckhart Tolle talks about in The Power of Now, just creating space to allow things to be, not fighting it, not suppressing it, not judging it, just leaving it to be. And that's a skill. But once you have that skill, there's real magic there. Because then when the noise happens in our life, when that person's being obnoxious, or they're being rude, or, you know, they're being misogynistic or racist or sexist or genderist or whatever, then you can just see them for what they are, just noise, and not get emotionally involved and wrapped up in it, and therefore not allowing yourself to be taken on the ride of what they've chosen to be, say, and do. And therefore, your reality loses the hook from them, and mastery and power comes back to you. And that's when you can start. Because I mean, people think that they start to do this stuff and everything's rosy. Doesn't mean that everything's rosy. It means that your resource, that no matter what it looks like, you're still rosy.
That's an important distinction. Mm-hmm. That you're the one who's rosy. That you're, I mean, that's basically re-empowering yourself.
Mm-hmm. And then, of course, law of attraction then says, if I'm rosy, then my reality must be rosy. So it creates a positive feedback loop. A rosiness.
A positive feedback loop. I mean, you're describing putting a new program into the subconscious mind without mm-hmm. hypnosis, without being exposed to 20 classes. I mean, it's kind of mind-boggling.
Well, sometimes hypnosis is an effective tool in order to do that. I mean, I learned hypnosis, and when I create visualizations, and, you know, we've got some out there available for people, I use it in my work. We use hypnotic suggestion in order to access the subconscious mind and have a communication with it. It's important to understand that all of these parts of ourself have different languages that they speak. And I think sometimes the reason why we're not able to effectively create a relationship that we want with these parts of ourself is that we fail to speak in its language. So when I speak to my subconscious mind, it's not understanding words, it's feeling imprints, it's feeling emotional imprints and images. If I speak to the conscious mind, it's understanding 1 + 1 = 2. If I'm speaking to the body, it understands feelings. If I'm speaking to energy levels, then the language is for that. And there are translators that we can work with. When we're bringing in support, sometimes that's what we're doing. We're getting a translator who can speak to that part of ourself in a language that it understands, so that the message that we'd like to communicate across gets there. And it's that combination of support and self-agency that leads to mastery, and therefore living more abundant, joyful, purpose-driven lives.
It's an idea that I think for some of our newest viewers and listeners, it's starting to sink in that there might actually be something to this. I mean, there's probably for many people still a lot of resistance, like, yeah, sure, I've heard this story before. It's a lot of positive thinking, crapple, all that kind of stuff.
Exactly. And, you know, if that's what you want. And I think one of the gifts that I've been given by my studies over the years is the idea that I let people be them. I'm not trying to rescue everyone. I'm not trying to change everybody. Here's a gift of potential for you to do things a different way. And if you accept it, there are plenty of us out here that you can find community and camaraderie or mentorship from and with in order to maximize that and to tap into it. And if you don't, that's okay too.
That's a stunning idea. What you're saying is this isn't for everybody.
No, it's not for everybody. And in fact, you know, one thing that I would even caution to the listeners is that for some people, they're better off just keeping their complaining and their bad attitude and their unhappiness, because the depth of addiction is probably not one that they'll even be able to transcend. Because the amount of leverage that you need in order to overcome, if you think about this, a lifetime of neural pathways being built in the brain, of learnt habits and behaviors, of payoffs from experiencing different patterns of behavior, it may be easier just to keep hitting your head against the wall than to dig in and turn it over. Now, am I telling people not to bother? That's not what I'm saying. But what I'm saying is that if you're going to come in and do this, be ready to come in and do this. And if your immediate thing is, I don't want to do this, then just ask yourself if the common denominator theory is something that you can get your head around. And that alone will give you an increase in your life quality. But if you're not ready to come and do anything else, that's okay too, because it just might not be for you.
And that is a key point also. What we're basically talking about here is not just creating or perhaps recreating the relationship with ourselves, but we're also talking about listening to ourselves. And that means listening not only to our thoughts, but to what we feel about stuff. So often in life, and I think all of us can point to dozens of examples of this, we look through our day and we say, we can see all the times that we're focusing our attention and giving our reactions to a whole bunch of stuff we don't like, a whole bunch of stuff that we really would rather not be there. And we often rail against it. We often get, you know, we fight it, we resist it, you know, we organize rallies against it. I mean, we just, we'll do whatever it takes to fight this crazy stuff that's out there, because there's so much of it, without realizing that when we're doing that, we're failing to say the one thing we need more than anything else, what it is we like, what it is that feels good to us. It's such an unusual feeling for many of us, because we just haven't been there lately.
And, you know, I've seen this time and time again, Walt, and I think especially for people who are facing really, really specific challenges, you know, if you're saying to a woman who's in an abusive relationship, for example, I'm sorry, just, you know, you're in this relationship, focus on what you want. don't think about what you're going through. And I think this is where the oversimplification of the law of attraction that's out there a lot in the public domain loses sight of the fact that maybe the thing that you need to do is get out of that situation so that you're resourced to be able to then move on to other things. I call it being in a conducive space to create. I mean, there was a woman who called me. She was a friend of mine. She called me up for some advice about a year or so ago. And she wanted to go to a particular meditation retreat that she wanted to go to. It was actually Dr. Joe Dispenza one that she wanted to go to. She'd been meditating about going to this, and the thing had been sold out for a while because now they sell out in about 10 minutes or something like that. And she wanted to go to this one, and she'd been dreaming about it. And then someone called her and said, hey, do you want to take my place? I'll sell you my ticket in my hotel room. She was over the moon, except she didn't have the money to pay for it. Now, her question to me was, you know, what does that mean? What does it mean? Now, there are so many different levels to this, and there's a reason why I'm making this point. There's so many different levels to this that I think people sometimes lose sight of. There is the point that the law of polarity says that if she really desires it, then in her life is the means to make it happen. She just needs to find it. The law of vibration says that if she vibrates at the frequency of the actual thing, then she will receive the means of expressing it. But then we've got to look at the fact that we are human. We have those belief systems. So if she still has a limiting belief around it, then even though the thing that she desired had started to show up, she was going to be limited in the full experience of it. And the other thing was, how was she going to feel emotionally with the options that were available to her potentially to do it? And the fact is, she was going to be in financial stress. She was not going to be in a conducive space even to get the most out of that event or even afterwards, because what's going to be happening was she's going to be dealing with that debt that she'd taken on, or that debt that, or that thing that she diverted money away from in order to go and do that event. And so I asked her, well, let's look at abundance. Doesn't abundance mean that this isn't the only one for you, that there could be another one going forward? Abundance doesn't have to chase after everything, even when it's going to put us in a state of stress in order to do that. And I've had people wanting to come to my programs, and I've said to them, this is going to put you in a space of stress. Either I'm inviting them to come in at a lower level of a program, or even to just use my free content for a while until they're ready to step in and do a program. Why? Because if someone comes into something in a state of stress, they're not going to be in a conducive space to create. So going back to our young lady who's suffering in a bit of a cheeky relationship situation, an abusive relationship, if she's spending her days in survival mode, wondering if she's going to say something that's going to set him off, or she's going to do something that he says is wrong, or she's going to trigger that abuse, then is she really going to be in a space where she can manage her emotional state, manage her thoughts, and manage her actions in order to move forward? No. So for many people, once they've identified what they want, it's about ensuring that the people, places, and things in our environment support us moving towards it. Before we start thinking about visualizing the thing and all of that, what can I do to bolster up my environment, the people, places, and things in it? What do I need to let go, the people, places, and things in my environment right now that are taking me out of a conducive space to create?
And in the specific example you were just giving of a woman living in an abusive relationship, it's very likely in most cases like that, that that person really has no idea where else they're going to go. I mean, she's feeling pretty lost, especially if she has kids. And like, oh, okay, well, it's really easy to say that, but what do I do? I'm just trapped here.
And this is where the micro shift comes in, Walt. Because before thinking about being a millionaire or having a house in Tahiti, let's look at the immediate step of what represents a conducive space to create. Maybe it's just having a safe place for me and my kids. And I can focus then on that. I can visualize around that. I can set the intention about what that feels like. I can start making some actions around that. Even if it's when he's out of the house, you know, doing some research into some support locally and visualizing receiving that support and moving towards that experience as a first step. That's what I would say.
So it's a way of, I think this is a way of saying, we talk about this as being a spiritual practice, but really this is a real world practice.
This is a real world practice that's got spiritual aspects to it, because we all have a spiritual aspect. We all have a non-physical aspect to ourselves. And people may scoff and guffaw at the use of the word spirit or energy, but this is measurable stuff now. This isn't fairy cakes and angel dust. This is measurable stuff. There are devices that we can use to take a picture of you right now, Walt, and say where your chakras are, how broken or how whole and vibrant your energy body is, and even how far it's extending beyond your body. We can measure that stuff now. So we're not talking about, you know, woo-woo stuff here. We're talking about real world stuff. And that energetic aspect of ourself must be aligned with what we want. What we believe about what we're able to experience must be aligned with what we want and how we show up every day, what we're doing, what we're choosing, the people, places, and things that we're inviting, allowing, or giving permission to be a part of our experience are having a direct impact on what we actually do experience.
So let's go back to the example we were just talking about, the woman living in the abusive relationship. And okay, she has decided she's going to start spending a little time each day when he's not around to maybe do some research or, you know, whatever she can do to kind of explore this further. Is this something she does every day?
This is the thing, again, where we start to, I mean, you know me by now, I'm not into the cookie cutter stuff, right? For two people, it's going to be a completely different situation. For her, it might be that she's working with neural pathways around this experience that are deep-rooted. Maybe she's seeing a repeat of her mum's experience as she was a child. Or maybe she went through some kind of childcare system that meant that she observed abusive relationships and therefore went out to accidentally repeat that pattern. Maybe he presented himself as a Prince Charming, like that film Sleeping with the Enemy, and thereafter found herself in this challenging situation. The fact of the matter is depending on the combination of experiences that led to this creation in the first place, a different approach may be required. The depth of intensity may need to change. The level of support that's required may need to change. So it's important to understand that no two people are going to come across the same challenge and overcome it the same way. The framework within which change happens is the same for all of us. Universal law doesn't change. But the way that we engage with it, the way we interact with it, and the way that we apply it must be specific to us in our situation.
So carrying on the example even further, okay, now she has done a little research and so forth. She still isn't quite sure how she's going to climb out of this, and what we all do when we're in especially stressful situations like this one, but it can be just normal. Is there such a thing as normal stress? It can be normal stress situations.
Everyday stress, mainstream.
Everyday stress. Yeah, that's good. It can be everyday stressful situations, you know, and they're every single day, and we're dealing with them every single day. And it seems like, you know, how on earth am I ever going to get out of this? Okay, I'm doing this stuff. You know, Daniel told me that I should, you know, have this better conversation with myself and so forth. So I'm starting to do that. But there's this other part of me that's saying, you're dreaming here.
Until that voice changes, nothing's going to change. The unconscious mind does not lose. But it didn't come from nowhere. It got that narrative because it was fed it. And it didn't happen overnight. It happened over time, a consistent series of inputs that supported that narrative. And so the solution is to change the consistent inputs that we're giving. So what are you consuming? What inputs are you giving to yourself? What conversations are you having with yourself and with others? What are you watching? What music are you listening to? So I always encourage people to continue to look at stories of people who have successfully done what you want. Why? Because that's secondhand evidence for the mind. Look at mediums that you believe. Bathe yourself in that. Pollute your environment with evidence that supports the idea of possibility of the outcome that you want. And then the resistance doesn't stand. The mind doesn't lie to you. The mind just repeats whatever narrative it's been given. If you change the narrative, then the voice will change and then your life will change. Does it always take a short period of time? I would say even if you're only 15 years old, you've spent 15 years building up an idea. Now look at something that you've known for a year or 2 years. Now multiply that by, you know, 15 times. That's a lot of imprints. Now I'm 37 years old this year. That's for the most part 30 years I've spent with my analytical mind building a vision of the world. It may take me more than 30 days repeating some mantra I got on YouTube in order for me to create a change. It may take more than 7 days, some 7 day challenge that I bought from some Instagram guru. It may take more than 6 months of me constantly showing up, choosing a new outcome for myself. But here's the crazy thing that I found time and time again. More, the less attached I am to the time it takes, the more focused I am in just embodying it now, the quicker miracles show up.
Ooh, big concept there. Not attaching to the time at all.
Mm-hmm. Being so caught up in the present activity of expansion, so caught up in the journey of becoming something new now, that there's no space for the stories of time to keep delaying the outcome. Change doesn't take time. Change takes an instant. What takes time is us getting ready to let go of the things that are holding us back from the change.
Wow. Yeah. And again, that's where the concepts that we talk about in this overall topic can kind of be mind bending. The idea that I don't have to be attached to a time, and that it's not a good idea to attach to a time. It has to be done by a certain time. It's hard to do when that rent check is due.
Yeah, of course. Of course. Of course. And again, well, we said this before. We're not saying that this is easy. We're saying it's possible. We're not saying that it was going to be rainbows and fairy cakes, but on the other side of it, rainbows and fairy cakes every day.
And the beauty is that if we're willing to commit to doing this stuff, and let's be perfectly honest, I've been doing this now for, 14 years. You've been doing it for 20 years. It's not like you ever stop learning to do it.
Nope.
This is an ongoing practice.
Ongoing. And, you know, part of my journey was coming through suicidal depression and other such dark shadows. And the depression still tries to get me sometimes. But the difference is I'm resourced to look at it and say, hey, how you doing? Door's not open for you, bro. Bye. Do
That's
I still
a great place
lose
to be.
My rag sometimes? Yeah, I do. Ask my wife. Ask Olga. I'm not always. Yay! There's times when I need to just go to the beach by myself and put my feet in the sand and just breathe a little. Times I need to go for a walk. Times I need to go to bed early. Sometimes I need to meditate a little bit longer. But I'm resourced to be able to take those actions. and in the face of the contrast that is a persistent truth in the dual nature of our reality, I can still be the rainbow and fairy cakes. And that creates a positive feedback loop that eventually will always loop back to give me a reality of rainbows and fairy cakes.
And in fact, we kind of talked about this for a bit a couple of days ago on the podcast, because mm-hmm. I told a little quick story. I didn't tell the whole story, but I gave a sort of an overview of how I did a crash and burn in one night. And it was the kind of thing that if I had gone through that, say, 10 years ago, before I really mm-hmm. had gotten a grasp of this whole thing, I could have stayed there for months.
Mm-hmm.
I climbed out of it in one day.
Take her.
That's the distinction. Mm-hmm. When you use this kind of practice daily, you mm-hmm. have a lot fewer of those crash and burn situations, mm-hmm. a lot more of the good stuff happening. Mm-hmm. And you start to build a mentality that says, I know that's not going to last. Stuff happens in life, but mm-hmm. it doesn't have to define my life anymore like it used to. And boy, oh boy, that's a wonderful place to be.
It's a wonderful place. And, you know, just going back to this rabbit hole, you know, the deeper you go down the rabbit hole, you realize that all of this is a fleeting experience anyway. And so you can start to laugh at the stuff that happens. And sometimes I catch myself doing that. I look at me wanting to get up. This happened yesterday. Someone did a post on Facebook and I was looking at it and I was like, I could feel myself getting charged by some of the Facebook. And I just reminded myself, so what? I was like, I can't believe this person's just said that. I was like, oh wow, I really just nearly got sucked into that story. And I just laughed at myself for a little bit because they're welcome to believe what they want to believe. Mm-hmm. Now, if what they believe starts to have a direct physical impact on me, my family, then obviously there's boundaries and we take steps in order to defend our safety and our position.
Sure.
But here's a really cool thing. If I'm not vibrating at a frequency that facilitates that kind of energy coming in anyway, then all it can be is something that I laugh at on Facebook and not something that comes into my direct experience. And if I do start to see it come into my direct experience, I know I'm the common denominator that I can change. And so I change my alignment so that it no longer reflects the possibility of experiencing that thing. And then it invariably changes.
Now, of course, like the movie The Secret, we have 1 hour for this program and we're down to about the last 2 minutes. So unfortunately, we can't go any further today. But we're hoping that this becomes the first of a series of engagements here on Public Access. And we also will invite people to join us on the podcast too. We actually do the podcast 5 days a week. Daniel is one of 8 co-hosts that I have. I have a great team. I mean, let me tell you guys, if you ever want to figure out a way to start a program of yourself and you don't know anything, bring on other people who know more than you do. It's tremendous dividends.
Amazing.
But thank you very much for taking the time with us today, Daniel. We really appreciate it.
It was a pleasure.
I know you have a place to go, so I won't keep you and detain you. I just will take a moment, though, to tell the people who are tuned in, there is an app you can download that will give you the access to listen to the podcast if that's something you're interested in. Go to, on your phone, whether you're using an iPhone or an Android phone, go to either the Play Store or the App Store, depending on what you're using, and just search for LOA Today Podcast Player, and it'll pop right up. Once you download and install it, you'll find Daniel's ebook, The Money Game, which is a great way to start tuning yourself into how to do this stuff, how to shift that mind step, Mindset. That's the word. The mindset. It'll shift that mindset one little micro shift at a time. And it's a great method to do that. There's also an audio version of the book that he was talking about, Stepping Beyond Intention. You can listen to that. And there's a whole bunch of other goodies on there too. So feel free to download that. It's all free. And hopefully this is going to be one of many future programs. So stay tuned, you know, pay attention to the programming on, the local cable access and watch for us again because we intend to come back. So thanks again, Daniel. This has been great. We really
thanks
appreciate
for having me. It's been amazing. Hopefully that people get something from this today.
I hope so. I really think there's going to be some new listeners here, which is a good thing. So thank you very much. Thank you especially to all of our listeners here on Local Access and especially to all of our podcast listeners who have been tuning in over the shoulder here. They've been listening in too. So for those of you who are regular listeners, we'll see you all next time here on LOA Today. Goodbye, everybody.